Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is supported by Google AdSense, who recently released a free ebook on native advertising. To see if native ads are right for your site, click on the AdSense banner at adexchanger.com/podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back. This is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger. And I'm glad to be with you for another episode of the show. I'm also very glad to have Erica Schmidt here in the studio with me. Erica is the managing director in North America for Cadreon, which is Interpublic Group's programmatic buying arm. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Zach. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. So let's start with a dumb question.
Yep.
What's Cadreon?
What is Cadreon?
And how has it changed over time?
Oh, my goodness. Well, how much time do we have to talk about the change over time? But I'll try to be as succinct as possible. So Cadreon, as you noted, is our programmatic buying arm, although I wince a little bit because I don't want us just to be about buying. I think
I didn't say trading desk.
Yeah, you did not,
but
which I'm
I
glad
did.
Because I actually said to you, I think when we pre-gamed for this conversation, don't call us a trading desk because we're not. But the reason I wince a little bit on buying is because we believe strongly that in order for programmatic to bring benefit to our advertisers, that it's not just about more efficient buying or cheaper impressions. It's much more about what is the overall data-enabled strategy that an organization can have, and how do we inform that to then make the investment strategy much smarter. So that's just a little bit of a – I hate to correct you, but just a little bit of a qualification.
No, I like it. So what – just to pause on that.
Yeah.
What – are some things that that Cadreon would do that are not media?
So a number of things. One of the things that we've been really successful at least during my tenure, and I can't take credit for it, but where we find that we get a lot of traction with clients is on our consultancy arm around data and DMPs. Mm-hmm. So, I've joked a lot on different public forums that, you know, the DMP is the thing that every CMO is talking about. How big is your DMP? How important is your DMP? What are you doing with it? And we found a lot of our advertisers either are very far along in their journey or in the early stages of their journey, just trying to understand the data assets that they have, how they could empower them or leverage them even better than they do today, and how do they just make sure that they have their collective house in order. And that's a really cumbersome process for a big company that has history and legacy around data, usually sitting outside of, you know, perhaps the marketing organization's hands. So what we've really had a lot of traction with, and that's different from just buying, is helping our clients to go through that process from building the business and the use cases for DMP to the RFP and the evaluation stages to the actual onboarding and then the activation of their owned and operated DMPs.
Interesting, but it feels to me, I've heard more about DMP advisory type services.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a kind of a blossoming consulting industry around that. But isn't every client only good for one project and then they've got their DMP and it's all set?
No, I mean, I think this is what's really interesting about it, Zach, is yeah, that's one project. That could be, depending on the advertiser and how mobile they are in terms of being able to do things, could be a quick burn process, or it could be a 1 to 2 year ambition. So it's a long project for some of the biggest advertisers that we have. And it doesn't just stop once they've onboarded that DMP and we start, you know, creating, crafting, curating, and activating audiences. It's about, okay, what are the things that we could, now that we have all this in order, we're proving out our business use cases, what more can we do to augment our strategy? And that's where we also continue to bring in values to say, okay, is it on the basis of cooperative partnerships with analogous advertisers who might not be in your competitive set, but who actually may have data sets that would be beneficial to you that's different than those third-party data sets that exist?
Are you brokering data co-ops?
We're starting to, yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is that mostly outside the U.S. or?
No. Okay. I mean, I think a lot of it, Zach, is it started for a lot of quote unquote, trading desks outside of the U.S. just because the data space is so nascent and third-party data providers came into Europe and said, oh, look, we've got all this prowess in the U.S. Why don't you start collecting our, you know, using and leveraging our data sets for activation? And what we found is, you know, who wants an NFL viewer if you're in Russia trying to target a consumer? So we had to get clever about data. And I used to be in Europe working in programmatic. We had to get clever about our data sets and not rely on those third-party data partnerships. But I think we're bringing a lot of that to U.S., but I think it has a lot more power and punch when you're bringing big, big scale advertisers who have, whether it's loyalty card data, and of course we know WPP has made a big play in that space, to, you know, just decent CRM, of course, putting it into a safe house so that there's not any PII sharing, but that there is a benefit there. And so brokering those cooperatives, I think, is really beneficial. And we're seeing the benefit of that in addition to what we do already in regards to publisher data partnerships. So, you know, publishers allowing us either to leverage their data sets to do better targeting within their environments, or even packaging up that data to use it in environments outside their owned and operated impressions.
Okay, so not just about trading media.
Yeah.
I'll let you go back for one more minute to talk about the evolution of Kadrion,
sure.
And then we'll drill down in a few areas.
Sure. So Kadrion's, I think we were the first to come to market in terms of what people then started calling trading desks and trading in RTB. And we were born out of San Francisco, which I love because if you think about a lot of the technology players in this ecosystem, they're also born out of the Valley. And it was on the basis of working with one core client and we had a different name. We had a very small group of people who were doing that and quite pioneering. And, you know, our founders are now out in the ecosystem continuing to propagate the good stories about programmatic. But I think we go through an evolution every couple of years in terms of who we are, what our positioning is, and how we continue to strive to provide value to our advertisers. So that piece around no longer just focusing on cheaper buying or more efficient buying to moving up the upstream in terms of strategic construct as well as the consultancy piece is really where we've come to today. And we continue to evolve that. And we think it's because there are lots of players who could come in and talk to our advertisers about this whole ecosystem, and they do. But we think that our unique positioning or perspective on the market brings value to our clients. We still remain very I hate the term, but because it's overused, but very agnostic about our platforms that we leverage. We still, you know, embody an open architecture that's very much plug and play. So, you know, bring your own DMP scenarios with new advertisers to helping them with those types of decisions, to thinking about how we latch on all those things to benefit an advertiser. And it's not just about, you know, an agency treating us like any other ad network,
right?
Flicking over an RFP, we respond to that RFP, and then away we go, and we're evaluated
kind of
on the same terms.
The classic understanding of a trading desk is the network agency. You know, in IPG's case, the media agencies are Initiative and Universal McCann, then treats the trading desk as a line item on the plan, and it seems to me, watching the holding company models evolve, that more clients are expecting something a little more nuanced. And, you know, I'm not super familiar with how that's played out at IPG. I know how it's played out at Publicis. I think that's been the most kind of visible use case for trading desk evolution. And I think it was fairly disruptive over there. And then I think WPP is making some clear moves away from, or at least to provide an alternative to, the undisclosed media arbitrage model. And it seems to me like every holding company has its own flavor.
Yep.
This is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to infuse the agency, the operating agencies, with programmatic knowledge. So that's up to you. It's up to, I guess, Arun Kumar, is he the CEO of...
Arun's our global president.
The global president of Kadrion.
And I oversee the U.S., so I report directly into him. And
got it.
The U.S. is the largest market for Kadrion. So
got it.
A lot of what we do, obviously, then infiltrates throughout the global landscape for us. But
So are there just a couple flavors that clients want, like non-disclosed and disclosed? Or is it more of a spectrum? Can you talk about that?
Oh, as my goodness.
As you move
on the spectrum, Zach. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
No, good one.
You know, I think one of the points, there's a lot in your question, so I'm going to try and unpack it a little bit. But the first and foremost is we have seen what the other players have done, and you know, Arun and I, especially you would have heard it, I think in articles with AdExchanger or interviews with AdExchanger about our point of view about the need to remain specialist, right? Mm-hmm. And so we still are. We're still very steadfast about that, but I think the dawn of the ANA report increased points of view on what programmatic arms of holding companies are up to has just, as always, has driven us to make sure that we are sizing ourselves, or not size is the wrong word, but that we're structuring ourselves and enabling our agencies and our clients to benefit from what we could bring to the table by being very flexible, right? And I think a lot of that is born out of the IPG open architecture point of view, right? So that, you know, when you bring a solution to a client via an IPG, especially when it crosses borders from media and creativity, that, you know, it's not so much about the individual entity's label. It's more about how we come together to bring the right proposition together for a client. So we're getting more and more, even though we've always been steadfastly and wholeheartedly in love and bleeding orange, and I'm using a pun that someone else has used because Cadreon is orange, we've always been that way, and I will always bleed orange. But that doesn't mean that it always works for every single client scenario or even the way that the agencies structure themselves around servicing a client. So the flexibility for us is, you know, this hybrid approach sometimes where it's, you know, we have people who are sitting with the agency teams, you know, sometimes it could be in a different location than our own building, who, you know, are able to infiltrate that programmatic knowledge to make sure that every strategic brief that comes through from a client, that it's woven in, the purpose is known as to why programmatic, and then, you know, leveraging the expertise that we have to be able to activate it. We're finding a lot more resonance when we go that way rather than the purely specialist, like one size fits all. The one size fits all approach we had to abandon almost 2 years ago because one size does not fit all, right? And so we find clients on a spectrum in the sense that there are those clients who, you know, it's still very much, I'm going to give you an objective. I expect you to hit that objective. I'm going to treat you like a line item on the plan. And as long as you're delivering performance, we're all good, right? There's not really a commercial model conversation to an evolution where clients forced transparency for the right reasons. And, you know, we were very much like the only way anybody's going to survive in this marketplace pre-ANA was to get that, I hate to call it open kimono, but to take that approach of, we stand for this, right? And that goes all the way back up to the IPG leadership and Michael Roth's transparency and open architecture point of view, to a dialogue about this is how it all breaks down in terms of where your dollar is going, to that was, let's say, a year ago. Now clients saying, okay, well, I want to reduce my fees. I'm obsessed with my working versus non-working equation when it comes to probably how they're bonus, right? And so that's a really cumbersome conversation, I think, full stop for the industry, because what's non-working versus working in a paradigm of programmatic, right? Because I would argue every single penny is working, because if you start to extract certain elements of it, you're not going to get the value there. So that's kind of where we're getting in terms of commercial models is, you know, a play of pure performance based to, you know, branding clients who just want to manage their agency fees to this whole, how do you help gain greater efficiency in terms of my working versus non-working
It's interesting
equation.
About working and non-working that you kind of object to the simplicity, the reductiveness of that statement. I would tend to agree. I mean, you guys are spending a lot on tech. I think that non-working media term references partly the ad tech tax, which has grown, but is actually perhaps shrinking now. But you guys spend a lot on tech, both measurement technology, media execution, data management. I'm sure there are lots of other sort of subcategories of advertising and marketing technology that you guys are laying out money for. And presumably, you think it's all worth it. But I'd be curious what your take is on the future of ad tech fees and the overall cost of non-working media spend. Specifically, you know, is it shrinking? I mean,
without a doubt, okay. Right? So, yeah. I mean, I think it's very interesting because if I think about, and, you know, I've been in this space now probably, well, to be 5.5 years in January. And looking at what, so if we're purely talking about ad tech, so platform-based costs, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen them drop by 5 percentage points between now and then. But that's 1% on a year-over-year basis where there's been pressure on that pricing. Mm-hmm. And that goes with scale, right? So I'll drop a percentage if we see a greater level of expenditure on our platforms. I don't think that equation works anymore, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, I would like to have a different type of conversation with our platform partners mm-hmm. around how they get compensated. But that's a vision for a different day. But I think the market has commoditized dramatically in the past 6 to 10 months in terms of what those platform fees look like. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of players who have been tremendously resistant to it, and rightfully so, who now, because of the pressures from clients' greater awareness, are starting to lower their price points. And I just didn't expect the commoditization like we saw in the ad serving space or in the search engine marketing space. I didn't expect it to hit us in the programmatic space as quickly as it has done. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a danger to that, right? Because what we've seen in both of those spaces is what the commoditization, when it becomes commoditized, mm-hmm. you also see the number of players condense. And we're seeing that right now, too. But that means that there's not enough healthy competition within the marketplace, which really concerns me because there's a couple of players who are looking to dominate. Mm-hmm. And I think that puts pressure just on all of us because then the innovation goes away. And I think that's really, really risky when we're still in what I would consider nascent days for programmatic.
And when the innovation goes away, when consolidation continues to yep. the point where there are just a very small number of platforms selling to you,
yep.
will prices go back up because they have market control?
It depends on what the big company in Mountain View does, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, we certainly have seen lots of interesting ways that they've approached the market now that they have the dominance in the ad serving space. So,
with Facebook now having completely bowed out of ad tech.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Right. But for a while, just 2 years ago, they looked like a contender.
They were building a bidder.
They had their ad server. And there was a sense that, well, if anyone's going to challenge DoubleClick, this mm-hmm. is going to be the company. And they're going to do it on the strength of their cross-device data set. And they also bought an SSP, so yeah. sort of a budding exchange there. And mm-hmm. now it's all gone very quickly. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you got to hand it to Facebook for realizing it's harder than they thought maybe to scale a business and build a mature ad tech stack. But now that that's happened, do you think DoubleClick effectively wins in terms of having a singular ad platform? Or do you still see, like, an opportunity for Verizon and AOL to,
exactly.
charge up the hill?
I absolutely do. You know, I think that's why there's a responsibility on all of us in this industry to make sure that we maintain diversity and inclusion. it's on top of mind because it's part of Michael Roth's agenda. But but I think in this space, diversity and inclusion is absolutely imperative. Because, let's face it, Google will stop innovating the minute that they have the market share that they would like, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that there is still space for the independents. There are still a few independents out there in the ecosystem. And the increase, I mean, it's going to take a long time for Verizon and AOL to get their house in order and to bring all those disparate systems together. Mm-hmm. But it's another walled garden. Look at what Amazon is doing where they have their own walled garden. Like there is, you know, Google can never be, and this is a lot of what we talk to our advertisers. Yes, of course, they're a partner. They're a partner to any agency holding group, whether they like it or not, whether you Sir Martin saying, yes, they're not, they're a frenemy. They're still a partner, right? And there's value that they bring to the table, which is why they maintain the partnerships that they have. But when we talk to our advertisers about, you know, what is the right place and what is the right way of thinking when you are embarking on really taking programmatic strategically on board? No one player can do it all still. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's face it, Amazon's not going to let Google into its walls. Amazon's barely shares any data out. So
walled gardens are here to stay.
Yes.
So we'll have decades
of walled... You said it much more succinctly than I did.
We'll have walled gardens for decades.
Yeah.
And they will be Amazon, Facebook, Google, among others.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that they will eventually accommodate the agency and advertiser community by allowing user-level data to be exported for measurement? It feels to me like that has to happen. And that seems to be the main challenge. The targeting is not so much the challenge. You can target on these platforms.
Yeah.
But you can't effectively incorporate the measurement, the reporting into a standalone attribution or measurement system. So if they could find some technical way to do that, then it's all good. We can move forward with walled gardens.
Right.
What do you think will happen there? Do you think?
I don't feel like today anybody is there or anybody is even willing to come to the table to have those types of conversations. I mean, we still struggle with, as I'm sure everybody else does, you know, third-party tagging. And so you can't pull all that out until you have the right tagging, right? We know that that's one of the hygiene factors. So the only way that it's going to change is when the market starts to demand that change, right? When you literally – and I don't think – as much as I love my clients and think they're sophisticated, you know, until the advertiser, beyond just what the agency is saying, until they start to push that market, it's not going to happen.
Okay, so
call me wrong if we're sitting here a year from now.
Yeah.
I'd happily take it on board.
Okay, we'll do that in a year if you're wrong, which I don't think you are. I think that with advertisers though, you do see a little bit of I will say standing up for their interests with regard to Facebook in particular. I'm thinking of. Some of their measurement problems at Facebook. They have admitted, copped to having screwed up on measuring engagement. I can't help but look at Facebook's measurement system as like held together with like, you know, a ball of twine and some masking tape right now. They brought in these outside measurement partners, Moat, Integral Ad Science, maybe Double Verify, I can't remember.
Yeah.
These guys get a look under the hood. They're like, wait a minute. You're measuring inaccurately. Facebook, to their credit, steps up and says, "Our bad. We made some mistakes. We're going to fix them. We're going to create this measurement board to help make sure we help keep us honest." And they have let the third parties in, which is great. But I guess there's an understandable trust gap right now with the brand marketer in particular that's just kind of pushed a bunch of money across the table and said, "Look, we trust you. Sell our stuff for us." And turns out maybe they shouldn't have to the extent that they did. So I guess that's just a long, rambling way of leading up to the question. Do you see clients asserting themselves more going forward with regard to their media spend on Facebook, but then also address beyond Facebook? Is there more of a pronounced point of view from your largest clients and the largest clients in the business?
I still think that there is a knowledge gap, right? So park the Facebook, because, yeah, of course, I'm proud and happy to see that they took a very honest approach once they discovered that the way that they were doing measurement was inaccurate. We could have told them that and did tell them that in a true partnership feedback-giving method to say, we don't agree with this, right? And we don't think it's going to fly, that you're going to take a different point of view on this measurement than the industry standard, right? Because clients are looking for like-for-like analyses and for really simple ways to manage and to understand the efficacy of their expenditure, full stop, right? The second, but when it comes to even the fundamentals around viewability, and, you know, of course, everybody, whether, you know, WPP has taken the stance that they have on viewability, we haven't done as much publicly about it in almost 2 years now, but there is still
just quickly, what is your viewability requirement?
We have a project quality endeavor, and, you know, moving towards being able to transact as much as possible. So not 100% like what Group M did, because we didn't think that the publishers were ready for that. And quite honestly, supply and demand necessitates taking the right position on that. But, you know, moving increasingly towards that 100% viewability. But the simple fact of the matter is clients, agencies still don't understand the methodology behind viewability measurement, which is part of the reason why we did a study with IAS to say this is the standards, that there's more than just what the standards are there. But a common thing is not all mobile is measured. Right. So, okay, do we include that or exclude that when we give a report where you have a let's call it a video campaign, and it ran across desktop and mobile. Mm-hmm. Do we eliminate that and normalize the numbers for the basis that not all mobile is viewable? When we're working on private marketplaces and trying to evaluate the performance of an individual publisher against our viewability standards or the client's viewability standards that we've guided and informed them on, if you're using two different measurement systems, then which number wins, mm-hmm. right? And right. that's also part of the problem. So I just think that measurement is, of course, absolutely important, but there are still tremendous gaps and swaths around methodologies and mm-hmm. around what the technology will enable, sure. as well as what are the standards.
Sure. I mean, that's absolutely a great point. Viewability could be a whole hour-long discussion.
Yeah, which I prefer not to have.
but then I think your point, the larger point is this shit is complicated.
Yes.
And clients do educate themselves increasingly.
Yeah.
But it takes not one person or 10 people full-time focusing on it, but
correct.
Dozens and hundreds.
Yeah, absolutely.
So clients will assert themselves to the extent that they understand the business, but they need a trusted partner like yourself to to help take positions, take stands.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
Absolutely.
Great. So let's talk about television.
TV.
You started in search.
I did, yes.
That's like many people in the programmatic digital leadership roles at agencies, you started at search at iProspect. And, you know, automation of search advertising came to display.
Yeah.
And it's proceeded fairly quickly into video.
Absolutely.
And now everybody has their eyes on the prize, television and mm-hmm. offline media. Talk about your progress there and what you're doing to try and bring this magic data and automation approach to the boob tube.
To the boob tube. Which, yeah, I mean, I probably did not expect when I started my digital career and my specialization in search that I'd be sitting at a table having a conversation about TV advertising, because that's part of the reason why I went into digital was because, oh, it's exciting, it's measurable, it's different, and where the future is going. But, you know, our TV is still important for mass and for reach, right? And there's no doubt behind that, and that's exactly what any agency worth their salt is going to continue the conversation. Of course, we want to make it as accountable as we possibly can by taking those digital signals and applying them perhaps to TV. You know, it's no doubt that there are big TV players who are now starting to question the validity of Nielsen as a system for evaluation, and I think we would tend to agree. And in fact, do agree, we're big partners with NBCU. So I chuckle every time I see one of the many headlines that comes through in our trade press around programmatic TV. And this has been the year, we always joke about the year of mobile, but this has been the year of programmatic TV. And I feel quite proud that we pioneered in that space and have been doing that for the past several years. And again, this isn't supposed to be a sales pitch for Cadreon, but I can't help but effuse with pride on what we are doing on the programmatic TV front. So it's all born out of the fact that we have, at a media brands level, we have our own unique data sets, and that's an amalgamation of data sets like Nielsen, as well as RentTrack, that give, as well as marrying those up with, you know, a Rosetta Stone of data to say, let's think differently about how we do TV planning and buying. And that's really what we've been doing. So take the principles of programmatic, although we recognize that it's never going to be in real time, at least not for, hopefully I'll be retired by the time it is. But it's not necessarily in real time, but how do we apply the principles of automation and data to TV buying to mm-hmm. get to increase the reach, to get a more effective CPM, all the same singular propositions that we talked about from a digital programmatic space, you know, 6-7 years ago when this industry was getting started. That's what we're applying to TV. And, you know, we are, it's a big part of our business and has been. You know, it's doubled this year over last year for us. Mm-hmm. And we're super excited about that. And we don't call it programmatic TV because it doesn't have that real-time instance of it. It's much more about the principles of data and automation that we apply to it.
Okay.
And that's, for us, what we call advanced TV. And, of course, there is a growing level of our business around addressable and household addressability, which we're super excited about as well. And that's a growing part of what we do.
Will the stuff you're doing play into the upfronts?
It already has for us.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So when I hear that, I think the buyers at UM will factor your advanced buying capabilities at Cadreon into their negotiations with the networks?
Yeah, well, so we go to market singularly from a Magna perspective. So Magna is our unified investment approach to the market. So we are very different from the other players, and it's important to call out. We start from the bottoms up, right? So that's all about what client objectives, needs, briefs look like for the year and what their budgets look like, to understand that when we go to market and have an upfront negotiation, that we're not putting a big number on the table or agreeing to the big number that comes from whether it's NBCU or Viacom until we have a big understanding of that. We're not taking a risk or hedging our bets on that media, which is an important facet of it. What we've made very clear in every single upfront negotiation is that data-enabled, automated television is core to our construct. Because we've made no secret about it at a Mediabrands level and a Magna level that, you know, we want to look at the TV marketplace differently, right? And we think that the marketplace is there to start driving some change. And so it absolutely is part of what we do in the upfronts, is saying we need the ability to apply our data sets to some of this buy or some of this commitment that we're making. It's not commitment, target that we have around the upfront. And then the buyers are well aware of that as they're going to market to say, okay, these are the upfronts that we've secured, the rates that we have. But, you know, where we come into play is both on that front, but also really helping out when there's scatter budgets, right? Because, you know, when the money comes into the market, that's where we could really help as well, because we could say we can make these dollars work harder.
Okay, great.
And manage price pressures.
Terrific. Let me ask you a question on automated guaranteed, programmatic guaranteed, private marketplaces.
Yeah.
This mode of buying has many different names.
It does.
All of which have too many syllables in them. but tell me about deals and how what Cadreon is doing. How much of that is now private deals?
I mean, it's grown for us dramatically, and it makes our Magna marketplace team very happy when they see the growth that we've had in the adoption of private marketplaces. We have several approaches. One is you know, we've always had always on foundational deals. Most of the other quote unquote desks will have those relationships with the Comscore top 500, where it's like, this is how we're going to enable things programmatically. How do we make sure that the deal IDs are in place and that, you know, all the plumbing is working? Let's be honest with each other. The plumbing still has kinks, right? Mm-hmm. So as we work through that, it's not as seamless as everybody will sell you on. But private marketplaces are still very much a big construct, especially when it comes to delivering on viewability metrics or the efficiency metrics that we may have from an advertiser. And really, programmatic guaranteed or automated guaranteed or whatever you want to call it, because it's all where it sits in the waterfall, is something that we're increasingly talking to our advertisers to, as well as our agencies. The way that we approach it, we think that we've found a really good approach in terms of how a partner like us to both the agency and the advertiser allows us to play a bit of a referee, right? So taking the principles of that direct buy, using programmatic and technology as well as data to start to understand who's really playing rightfully in the right space, who's getting the best performance, and to manage the buys in a much better fashion that way. So that approach is really starting to become a bigger part of what we are. And, you know, that scales up and it gives the advertiser a much better view than just that singular line item, a much better view on the performance of their overall digital plan.
Okay, great. Let me ask you a final question on creativity.
Yeah.
Messaging in programmatic has always often been thought of as a weak point.
Yeah.
How do we solve for that in the industry? Are there ways that you can support the creative agencies at IPG, for example? Yeah. Are there technologies that are going to advance the storytelling aspect of automation?
Yeah.
speak to that, would you?
Okay. Well, it's one of my favorite subjects. Mm-hmm. I could talk forever. So again, in the interest of time and succinct.
Just keep talking and then we'll slowly fade out.
As I put everyone to sleep. No, I mean, I think everybody recognizes whether we bucket it under programmatic or we just think as a collective industry, mm-hmm. that the intersection between media and creativity, those roads that went two disparate directions are now coming back together. And that's tremendously exciting. We saw it at Cannes, right, where there were several categories, which was around using data to empower creativity, mm-hmm. And what were the best stories that were told as a result of that. And we feel like, as being part of the IPG family, that we're at a really advantageous position because we have the brilliant storytellers and the creative directors who typically – and I don't mean this as a criticism of them, who typically think about that one spot, right? And then everything then kind of comes out of that from a production perspective. And it's like, it's all about that 30-second spot.
Right.
We think that there's a huge opportunity there. And there's already work that we've done, whether it's Brazil, really easy because media and creativity has always remained together, where we're able to do, you know, thousands of permutations of a 30-second spot specific to the audience that we have to deliver, a commercial for Axe, which has really, really reaped a lot of rewards in terms of sales, and that it's not just your 18 to 34-year-old male, that they're not just as simple as their demography, that there's a lot more to them. We work very closely with the Martin Agency on a lot of things what we do for programmatic, specifically in the Vance television category, but that's hugely resounding to them because they're one of the best TV spot players in the U.S. And so saying to them and literally talking about how do we unlock storytelling, wouldn't it be great if you had technology and data to underpin how you go to market on this? And, you know, most creative directors, you would expect them to sit with their arms crossed, you know, leaning back in their chairs, disinterested. I don't want this new way of thinking, to all of them leaning in really hard and saying, we really want to make this happen. So that's really big picture and really where I think the industry is going and where a lot of people have ambitions on. I think, but we shouldn't forget that the brilliant basics aren't there right now, right? Like there's nothing more infuriating than being chased by an ad with really crap, you know, dynamic insertion that may or may not be relevant to what your likes and interests are or what you were actually spending time in on whatever retail-based property. And I think we just owe it upon ourselves. We talk about the right ad at the right time, but we really don't think about that right ad. And I do think that technology has come a long way, but it still has a long way to go in terms of being able to enable that so that when you're talking to, for example, a pharmaceutical advertiser who has a legal department who needs to approve everything that you do, saying we're going to unleash 50 versions of the same ad based on, you know, different data signals.
Wow, great point.
They're going to want to review that. So the technology as well as the thinking is
still... The process. There's technology, there's process.
Yeah.
And then regulatory. It's tough. It's a tough problem. Maybe the toughest problem in the programmatic space.
Indeed.
Well, thank you so much, Erica Schmidt. I really enjoyed having you in the studio.
Thank you. I enjoyed being here.
And for the listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of our program. I invite you to subscribe if you haven't already. And we've been doing this now for about 8 episodes. I'm curious what you think. If you have any thoughts, suggestions, please email me at zach@adexchanger.com. Thank you.
Recorded at the studios of Bigfoot Music in New York City.